This is the son of PCJ. Shortwave listening, to many the final frontier. These are the voyages of PCJ Radio's Media Network Plus. Its continuing mission to track down strange new signals and to seek out new stations and radio personalities and to boldly go where many men have gone before.
Hello and welcome to the program. Today we tell you about a mystery that involves the former Communist Party chief of Chongqing, China, the death of a British businessman, the city's chief of police seeking asylum at an American consulate. It just goes on and on. Because of all the rumors surrounding this case, Beijing shut down 16 microblogs and arrested 6 people for spreading rumors of a coup. What is going on? We'll have the details on the closing of these microblogs. Longwave part of the AM spectrum below 500 kHz is not really well known in many parts of the world. Kevin Carey is the author of a book called Listening to Longwave, and he'll be joining us to talk about his book and what you can hear below 500 kHz. Media Network Plus, tuning away the blues. First, here's Keith with a look at some of the headlines from the world of media.
This week, the Canadian government announced a cut in budget for the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. Canada's public broadcaster will have a budget cut of $115 million Canadian dollars over the next 2 years. And a total of 650 jobs will be cut across the country. CBC President Herbert Lacroix.
Well, any time that you need to put in perspective $200 million challenge, 115 of which comes from government, and another 25 to deal with the severance to pay off the 650 jobs that we're going to be eliminating, it's a tough day. This has not been fun.
The cuts to the CBC's budget will affect both radio and television services across the country. CBC Radio 2, for the first time, will be running radio ads as a way to subsidize its budget. CBC Television is also expected to see a major change in programming, with more repeats. Herbert Lacroix again.
Radio 2 and Espace Musique, the French equivalent of Radio 2, will see, because we filed our CRTC application today, we'll see ads on it if we're successful in front of the CRTC. Because what we looked in this $200 million challenge is to try to get $50 million more out of our revenue line. Because $50 million more out of there means $50 million less cuts on program services and employee jobs. In that $50 million, there's a piece of it that goes to advertising from our two Espace Musique and Radio 2 networks. What you'll see also is on the programming schedules, you'll see more repeats. I mean, all the details of the programming schedules, even though they will look good, you'll see less variety, you'll see more repeats. I mean, in terms of the number, instead of doing 13 or so episodes per series, you'll see 10, you'll see less, and you'll see more of that as we go forward. Those details will come to our employees next week. Ask Kirsten Stewart, who's the head of CBC, and Will Allan, the head of Radio-Canada, will get into the more granular piece of the announcements that we made today.
Radio Canada International will also suffer a major budget reduction. RCI's annual budget will go from $12.2 million Canadian dollars to $2.2 million. Two-thirds of RCI staff will be cut. The English and French newsroom will be cut. Russian and Portuguese programs will be dropped, as well as all shortwave and satellite transmissions. The new budget is expected to begin in June. James Murdoch resigned as chairman of the British pay TV giant BSkyB on Tuesday, saying he did not want to become the lightning rod for the hacking scandal of his father's media empire. The post was the last major role held in Britain by James Murdoch, who is facing growing pressure over what he knew about the illegal accessing of voicemails at the now-closed News of the World newspaper. The satellite broadcaster, which is 39% owned by Rupert Murdoch's U.S.-based News Corp, announced that James would be replaced by the deputy chairman, Nicholas Ferguson. Andrew Neil, a former executive chairman of Sky Television, was asked why James Murdoch resigned when he did.
I think better to jump before you're pushed. There's a report coming in Britain from the Media Select Committee of the House of Commons, which has been investigating the hacking scandals. It's the famous one that both Rupert Murdoch and James appeared before. It was the famous one, of course, where the Pyman also made an appearance. Now, all the signs we're getting is it's coming out just after Easter, and it's going to be pretty critical of James Murdoch's handling of the whole hacking scandal. And I think there was a danger that if he'd clung on to this job, he would have been forced out as chairman. Indeed, he may have been forced off the board altogether. Whereas what has happened today is he's resigned as chairman, but he stays as a non-executive director.
That was Andrew Neil, the former executive chairman of Sky Television. World Radio Switzerland is threatened with either closure or privatization. That's according to Roger de Werck, the director general of the Swiss Broadcasting Corporation, WRS's parent company. He said the English language radio station should no longer be publicly funded. No one at the SBC was available to comment. But de Werck made it clear on Monday that the options were closing WRS down or selling it. And that was a look at some of the news happening in the world of media. I'm Keith Parron.
Call the PCJ answer line at country code 44-20-3286-1399. That's country code 44-20-3286-1399 and leave your comments and questions. On shortwave, satellite, and the internet, this is PCJ Radio.
On March 15th, Beijing top party chief in the city of Zhongqing was fired. Bo Xilai was seen by many as the golden boy of the Communist Party and someone who could have been picked as the party's future. But this didn't happen. Just before he was fired, his chief of police was trying to seek refuge at the American consulate. A British businessman with ties to MI6 and part of Xilai's inner circle was found dead in a hotel in Chongqing. Authorities reported that he died from consuming too much alcohol, but an autopsy was never done and his body was cremated. So with all these twists and turns and lack of information from Beijing, it sparked a flurry of speculation online within China. On March 31st, Beijing shut down 16 microblogs and arrested 6 people for spreading rumors of a power struggle and coup within the Communist Party. Keith joins us now for more.
Bo Xilai, for those who don't know, was the head Communist Party chief for the city of Chongqing, which is one of the most vibrant cities in China. This story has so many twists and turns. It's like a never-ending mystery novel. So many things have been happening with this case. It changes every day. And what happened was, because the government really didn't say anything to begin with, or what was really going on, they shut down these blogs because all of a sudden, rumors started to appear.
So censors apparently then have been having trouble keeping up with this. And so how have they been censoring it, and how are the people getting around the censors?
Well, basically what happens, if you go to any of the microblogs in China and post something about Bo Xilai, it'll be taken down immediately. Or if you do a search on any of the search engines in China for Bo Xilai, you'll just get a message saying, oh, we can't find any information. But people are very savvy. So for Bo Xilai, for example, they'll come up with another name like, the duck that got lost or something, a translation in Chinese, right? Mm. And then people know, oh, that's what it refers to. So then they can search and then they can post things. But it takes a while for the censors to catch up with this, to find out what the secret names are for everybody involved in this story. I mean, this whole story involves, listen to this, it involves a British businessman who was found dead in a hotel room, who had connections with MI6. It involves the former chief of police for Chongqing seeking refuge in the American consulate in the city. And then when he left the consulate, he disappeared. It involved pressure against so many people who just disappeared or refused then to have any knowledge of what Bo Xilai was up to.
So since the government then is cracking down on providers now? Because this is just like in the old Cold War days when people talked in code, right, amongst themselves because they were looking over their shoulder to see if there was some Communist Party member going to take them and send them off to a gulag or whatever the Chinese equivalent was. So that's the situation now with the censors. So they're having trouble keeping up. So the government then has to crack down on the providers, right? And how are they doing that? What are the curbs that they're bringing in?
Well, what they're doing, for example, if you or I sign up to a social media site, we can sign up and we don't have to, let's say, give our social insurance number or passport number. The new regulations in place now in China, if you sign up with one of these blogs, first you have to sign up with your own name and then you have to use your ID number, your actual ID number. And the system is set up so even if you enter a fake ID number, it won't let you join. You have to enter the real ID number. So this is what they're doing. And they've been doing this now more so in the past year because Beijing is really tense about the situation in the Middle East because we've seen how it's been playing out. People are getting information from Twitter. They're getting information from Facebook and other social media sites. So when it comes to social media sites now in China, they're really nervous, really nervous.
Well, so rumors have been spreading about there being a coup in Beijing. They were actually using that word. But on the other hand, there were reports that it was just talk and it was actually the whole idea was far-fetched. But is the Chinese government so threatened, they're so insecure in their leadership and their grip on power and controlling the society that they're really worried about this and they're willing to take these expensive, drastic measures, tying up civil servants and stifling commercial enterprise to keep a lid on it?
Well, you see, this is the situation in China. China has a lot of cracks in the system. In the past few years, there have been more and more protests taking place in the countryside. Some of them are, of course, legitimate reasons to protest. Others are because of rumors that started. Now, the rumors start only because Beijing keeps a tight lip about things. So because they're not saying anything, it makes people wonder, well, why are they being so quiet about it? What are they trying to hide? And then, of course, maybe somebody mentions, oh, there's a possible coup. And it's like the old game of broken telephone.
Right.
Maybe you mention possible coup, and then maybe, you know, 100,000 people down the line, you know, who are reading this and commenting, all of a sudden it turns into a coup. And then it turns into tanks, you know, going into Beijing. So, you know, part of the problem is that because Beijing didn't say anything to begin with, these rumors just started.
So they create their own problem, in other words.
Exactly. They created their own problem. If they'd come forward to begin with and say, well, Bo Xilai did this, that, and the other, this is what we're doing, maybe then it would have been handled differently. Now, I don't want to give too many specifics around this case because it's forever changing. And by the time this program airs, probably some information that I would give out right now would be out of date. So I don't want to give too many specifics about the case. But like I said, it is a real mystery.
And we'll have more for you as this story develops. You're listening to Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio. Longwave is a part of the spectrum that many people are not familiar with. Kevin Carey is the author of Listening to Long Wave, The World Below 500 Kilohertz. So just what can you tune into and what can you hear? We contacted Kevin for more information about Long Wave and what you can listen to.
Long Wave really refers to the lower reaches of the radio spectrum. There's an inverse relationship to frequency and wavelength. So we have these very low or small frequencies, say 100 kilohertz, but it's a very long wavelength in terms of the sine wave being emitted by the antenna. So they're referred to as long waves, which is really a relative term. I mean, we have the medium wave, the AM broadcast band, but you do rarely hear of long wave outside of Europe and parts of Asia, where actually it's been very popular for broadcasting for a number of years.
Has long wave ever been used in the United States for broadcasting?
Well, not for broadcasting, and that's an interesting topic. I recently had a reader from my Monitoring Times column ask that question. And the only thing that I can really figure is that the band was used early on for aviation or navigation application, beacons, non-directional beacons. Some of these came on the air as early as the late 1920s, and that's really when broadcasting was taking off, at least here in the U.S. And so since the band was already in heavy use and growing use for long-wave beacons, I think that kind of precluded having broadcast stations on there. That's my theory, but I'm certainly open to any other inputs that folks might have.
What are some of the advantages and disadvantages by using long wave as a means of transmission? Now, when I was living in Europe, BBC Radio 4, you can pick up in most European countries. The same thing with Deutschlandfunk and some of the long wave broadcasters out of Russia. There was certainly no problem picking them up.
Yes. One of the key benefits is the propagation. And as you noted, some of these stations can be heard over a very wide area, four or five countries or more. It's not unusual. And longwave has ground-hugging characteristics. By that I mean the skip zone, the skip mode of operation is not very prominent, especially when you get down in the lower reaches, 180 to, say, 300 kilohertz. There's not a lot of skip happening, but yet the signal will go long ranges, even during the daytime, over ground wave propagation. So that's a key benefit. The con side to it is the size of the antennas needed. They're humongous. I talked earlier about the long wavelengths involved on these frequencies. Well, that necessitates a very large antenna, at least if you're going to be transmitting. So very large antenna arrays, a lot of high-power installations, but the coverage really balances that out.
So if you take, let's say, your average shortwave station that would use maybe 100 or 250 kilowatts to cover a very wide area, would you use the same power with longwave?
Well, you could, and I'm sure that there are some lower-powered longwave stations that might be in that range. But I hear frequently of broadcast stations on longwave who are using a megawatt or more of power. So that's not uncommon.
Your book, Listening to Longwave, The World Below 500 Kilohertz, what do you mainly focus on in the book for somebody that doesn't know? Now, I read the book, but I want people to go out and get the book, so I don't want to say too much about it.
Appreciate that. Well, the book really is an introductory coverage of longwave. I tried to make it as broad-based as possible. We want to have folks read the book who might only know the name longwave, and they're just curious about what goes on there, what types of stations use the band, what's involved with setting up a receiving station, how do I improve reception. All of these sorts of things are covered. We go into some of the special users of the band, like the so-called loafers or low-frequency experimental radio stations. We cover, of course, the non-directional beacons that are on there, some of the weather broadcasts and foreign broadcasts that can be heard from overseas. So there's quite a bit of coverage there, and my goal really was to range it from the very beginning listener to someone who's already involved in longwave and just wants a handy reference to see what's new on the band, maybe since they were active. This actually was a revision of an earlier book that was done, back in the 80s. And there had been so much change in the band, new users, some countries allowing amateur radio operations, things of that sort. So it was really time to refresh the book and bring it up to date.
How did you get interested in longwave? Because, a lot of modern receivers don't have longwave. I know there's listeners right now probably living in the United States and Canada that say, oh, I remember an old Grundig or Telefunken radio my parents bought from Germany had longwave on it. But how did you get interested in it? Because most shortwave radios that you can find today don't have the longwave bands.
Oh, that's a great question. I guess as I think back on my interest in the radio hobby in general, I've always been drawn to underdog things. tell me that I can't do something, and I'm going to try to find a way to do it. So, you know, long wave, I first read about it in the ARRL operating guide from the mid-1970s, and it covered every ham band one by one with different headings from 160 meters right up to 10 meters. And then it had this side note that there's this experimenter's band at 160 to 190 kilohertz. And it talked about how equipment had to be home-brewed because there were very few, if any, commercial sources for this type of equipment. The operating conditions were very challenging, a maximum 50-foot antenna and 1 watt of power. So I looked at that side note about this band, and they made the point it was not a ham band per se, but available for experimentation. And from there, I started exploring more and more. And then I saw a circuit for a receiving converter in 73 magazine, which was written by Ken Cornell, who is now a silent key, unfortunately. But he lived in New Jersey, and he was known as the long wave wizard. He promoted this experimental band back in the early 1970s when hardly anyone here was using it. Most people weren't even aware of it. But anyway, he had this conversion circuit which allowed you to listen to that range and other long-wave frequencies just using an 80-meter hamband receiver. And I built the circuit up. I still have it, in fact. And that kind of got me started. And when I tuned into these beacons, I wanted to learn more about them, of course, and got involved with the Long Wave Club of America, the LWCA, which is still active today. And it kind of blossomed from there.
At this very moment, if you turn on your long wave receiver, what can you hear where you are?
Well, being daylight right now, we're 12:30 p.m. local time, I would expect to hear mainly non-directional beacons, or NDBs. These are 25 to 50 watt, typically, operating stations for the benefit of aircraft, for homing applications. Our area here has five or six of them around, say, within 60 miles of my location, so I would expect to hear those. A little higher up in the band, I would probably expect to hear the Navtex transmissions, which are teleprinter-like traffic sources that are used for weather conditions and maritime notices and things like that. So those would be the main things. I would not expect to hear any broadcasters at this time of the day. You really need a path of darkness between here and, say, Europe to have a shot at hearing them.
But can you hear the broadcasters from Europe?
Oh, yes. It's not what I would call armchair copy. I have a pretty good assortment of antennas here, directional loop, an active antenna that's specifically for long wave. And since I'm in a fairly rural location, yes, I would expect to hear five or six of them. And it would be a bit of a struggle, perhaps, to pull out what was actually being said. You would certainly recognize songs if they were playing music. I once heard a cricket game being broadcast, which was kind of interesting because there was a stateside beacon in the background keying away, and I'm hearing these results for a cricket game.
The book is called Listening to Long Wave, The World Below 500 Kilohertz. The author, Kevin Clary, is joining us. Kevin, if somebody wants to get the book, what's the easiest way?
Well, the book is offered by Universal Radio. Universal was my publisher on the project, and they are located in Reynoldsburg, Ohio. And for anyone who wishes to check it out on the web, they can go to universal-radio.com. Universal and then a dash radio.com. And look under the books section of their offerings, and you'll get complete information.
Kevin, thank you very much for talking to us today.
Been my pleasure, Keith. A lot of fun.
For more information on how to order a copy of Kevin's book, go to www.universal-radio.com. So, what's propagation going to be like over the next 7 days? Here's Dan Hensley to let us know.
The 10.7-centimeter flux takes a steady dip this week, corresponding with a continued decrease of sunspot groups. On April 7th and 8th, a 10.7 centimeter flux of 130. On April 9th, a 10.7 centimeter flux of 120. On April 10th, a 10.7 centimeter flux of 110. On April 11th, a 10.7 centimeter flux of 105. On April 12th and 13th, a 10.7 centimeter flux of 100. The A index will be 5 for the first 4 days of this week, from April 7th to April 10th, 2012. On April 11th, an A index of 8. On April 12th, an A index of 12. On April 13th, an A index of 15. For the first 4 days of this week, from April 7th to April 10th, 2012, we'll see a KP index of 2. On April 11th, a KP index of 3. On April 12th and 13th, a KP index of 4. A magnetic filament connected to sunspot AR1450 erupted on April 2nd, hurling a faint CME in the direction of Earth. A weak impact was expected sometime on April 4th. NOAA forecasters estimated there was a 15-25% chance of polar geomagnetic storms when the cloud arrived. Sunspot group 1445 is passing out of view, with sunspot groups 1450 and 52 in view at this time. At this time, solar activity is low, and there are no crackling of sunspot groups. No flaring has been observed. April 12th and 13th brings us to an extremely high A index reading. One coronal hole has been observed. A wind is streaming from that hole, and it may very well have a minor effect on Earth's magnetic field by April 7th.
Thanks, Dan. So with that, we've come to the end of our program. If you'd like to get in touch with us, drop us an email, mnp@pcjmedia.com. Again, that email address is MNP, stands for Media Network Plus, mnp@pcjmedia.com. And as well, you can visit our website, pcjmedia.com, and you can download this program and other past editions of Media Network Plus. So on behalf of Keith Perron and Dan Hensley, I'm Paulette McQuarrie saying so long and see you soon. Thank you.